Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin, Professor Luke O'Neill, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. How's it going? And Pat, to kick off, there's big news actually just been released. They've approved the first vaccine for human use in China, if you can believe it. So we now have the first vaccine approval in the world. It's a company called CanSin Bio. It's approved for sale with the military. They're going to give it to the military. And it's very interesting, in fact, because it's the first one now actually into humans, you know. And what's interesting is it's like the Oxford one. It's the same kind of technology. So, of course, we'll wait now with bated breath to see what happens with these first humans that have been given the first vaccine as a real preventive, you know.
Now, I don't know how the military muster in China, but they're certainly on the border with India at the moment. They might be the first people you'd give it to, but they are probably, you know, a lot of the time confined to barracks in close proximity. So it's actually not a bad place to go first, because already we're hearing from the United States quite large numbers of the military there are infected.
That's right, Pat, exactly. But can you imagine, we've reached a milestone, I guess, first vaccine approved for human use. Now, the worry is it's early, you know, and it's been through phase two. It seems to be safe. It seems they've released some of this already. It seems to drive a good immune response. And now into humans, it's almost like the Chinese will use their military like an animal in testing in a way, kind of, you know. But still, it'll be very valuable information for us, won't it, to see how this vaccine now performs. And you're right, the military are in places where the virus might still be there. So we may see the first signs of a vaccine actually showing efficacy, which is very, very exciting milestone. But again, caution, because, you know, it's still early days. But there you have it, the first vaccine into humans.
Now, in a few moments, we'll talk about zoonotic diseases, ones that jump from animals into humans, because that's where the quest for the next pandemic might be coming from. But let's just talk about the topics du jour. Masks on public transport, and you are our guinea pig.
I am. And every morning I'm obsessively counting. So this morning, Pat, there were 18 people in my carriage. 7 of them had masks. Right now, your heart sinks a little bit. But a week ago, it was maybe 3 or 4 had masks. So it's gone up slightly, but it's still only 30-40% on the dart, you know, which isn't good enough. We've got to get to 70-80% mask wearing, really. So let's just keep a very close eye on that one.
Yeah, Dublin Bus have reported, I think, 41%, about the same as you're seeing on the dart. Was there reasonable spacing between the people, or are the darts getting more crowded?
They're more crowded. So before, they've cordoned off each little section, but it's one person for 4 seats, you see. So that's reasonable, I suppose. But you're seeing all of those being full now. So I would say it's twice the density as it was, and a slight increase in mask wearing. More people, a couple of people standing again, you see, by the door and so on. So they're not maintaining social distance, that's for sure. I watched for that closely as well. So people are coming within the 1 meter of each other. And if they're not wearing masks, we know what can happen. So we've got to really get on this one and try to make sure there's an increase in compliance. Mm-hmm.
Now, one of our researchers who doesn't come from the Dublin area was remarking that there are people going on holidays from where she is from, the Midlands area, but they're not telling family and friends that they're going away on foreign holidays because they're a bit embarrassed.
Yeah, that's a worry, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the big topic today, but I mean, there's no question it's the biggest risk we now face is travel. And Pat, remember, if we get this one wrong, the schools will not reopen in September. That's how serious it is. Because if you start to see numbers going up, 5, 10, 15, 20 here and there, you can't open the schools in places where there's spikes. That's how serious it is. So we've got to look at this extremely carefully and very, very closely, obviously. And that kind of thing will happen. The stories of 100 kids going off to Portugal to celebrate the leaving cert results, you know, and then coming back again. I mean, this kind of thing is, it could be a recipe for disaster. So again, the new government, of course, but it's a great chance, by the way, for the new government to kick the tires on the testing and tracing. That has to be really good. Remember, if that's no good, spread will happen. Get the compliance on masks up as well. Really important. These things have to be in place before we consider any kind of loosening of travel. And even the famous green countries, that's a good idea, of course. And we have sympathy, haven't we, with the airlines? Of course we do. But this green country is a good one, but we've got to be ready for that. The timing has to be right to allow these things to happen. Otherwise, there will definitely be spikes coming into Ireland with all kinds of consequences.
Now, we're told last evening on the American news programs that I was watching that Donald Trump is now in favour of masks. And we may well see him in public. In fact, he said, and if we can find this clip, we'll play it later on in the programme, he said he kind of looks good in a mask. He reminds himself of the Lone Ranger.
Isn't that fantastic, Pat? Yes. Well, remember your phrase, masks for slow learners. This confirms that Trump is a slow learner, does it? Because it's taken him months to get there, hasn't it? It's alarming stuff.
They're ganging up on him. Yeah, the Republicans are ganging up on him. There's a whole welter of them now saying, please, Mr. President, will you indicate that mask wearing is a good idea, not that barefaced is macho, which is the way he had been telling it. Number of cases in the US, the highest number in 24 hours, 52,000 new cases in 24 hours.
It's alarming, Pat. Again, we don't want to scare people up, but, you know, it's burning with a blaze now in lots of countries around the world. Over 10 million cases now, 500,000 deaths, and that's probably 10% of the real number. And the US is absolutely on fire, isn't it? And again, because they opened up far too quickly. That's the absolute warning we have now, isn't it? There's the evidence you need. So it's a shocker, isn't it? Now, the question is, how do you wrestle that back under control? It's going to take them months to get these numbers down. And we know Tony Fauci is now on record, again, saying highly disturbing, you know, 100,000 cases, those kinds of numbers. And of course, any chance of bringing the US into Ireland, can you imagine as our tourists? By the way, Pat, there's a great piece in the Irish Times by my colleague Tomás Ryan you should read on the travel issue. He said if we let the US in now, it'd be 47 infected people per day would be let loose in Ireland, that kind of number. Now, we're not suggesting the US should travel here, of course, but again, that's the seriousness of this. Those countries are absolutely off limits, aren't they? Is the key message there, I guess.
Now, the idea that you can open the schools and the primary schools for the younger children, where we've already discussed, you and I, about the lesser likelihood of them being infected in the first place and also being spreaders, that looks straightforward, perhaps. The secondary schools, 1 meter social distancing and trying to, you know, get everyone to go to school for at least a portion of the week. What do you think?
Yeah, it's reasonable. I mean, we've got to get the schools to reopen. Again, I think the two priorities are the travel issue, look at that closely, and get ready for the schools reopening. They're the two key things of the government I'll be focusing on, absolutely. So the secondary school plan looks reasonable. But again, we've got to make sure the viral count is massively low, remember, when we get to this stage, and we've got to make sure people are wearing masks and, following all the guidelines. If all those things are in place and the testing is good, then these things are possible. If that changes between now and September, that lessens the chance of those things, and you need a lot more caution then, you know. So in other words, if we want to reopen the schools in an environment that isn't optimal, you'll have to impose certain restrictions to decrease risk, you see. So it really is a complicated thing that's moving every day almost, you know.
Yeah, my daughter Nicole made a suggestion to me a few minutes ago. She knew we'd be talking about this, and she said maybe they should introduce a buddy system in schools. In other words, that you're always with the same couple of pals.
Yeah, very sensible.
Whether you're doing geography or science or whatever it is, that you stay with the same number of people, the same people all the time, so only 3 get it instead of 23 getting it.
That's a great idea. And it's the bubble. The New Zealand had this bubble idea. Your own little bubble. You know, you're maybe 3 or 4 or 5 people that are in your bubble and you stick with them all the time. That's right. They'll just spread in that group if something happens. You know, that's a great suggestion. They should be looking at those kind of things again to decrease risk. It's all about measures that decrease risk of spread.
Now, you know, the European Union has opened up to 19 different countries. We were invited to join, but we could only join that group as long as the UK joined as well. But looking at the stats from the UK, the infection rate in Leicester, 140 times greater than that in southern England. And Boris Johnson about to give, it is said, 95 countries the green light for travel.
Yeah, I know. It's see, the trouble is it's very complicated about it in the sense. I mean, different regions, different levels of infection. How do you control it? Who do you let in and out? I mean, this is going to be really, it isn't going to be a simple case of let all these countries, you know, travel between each other. It can't be as simple as that because of that kind of regional thing you see. So now remember, it's not as simple as Europe opening up, by the way. Different countries have different rules. Greece is insisting on testing on arrival, for example, still, I believe. So in other words, it's a complicated issue, isn't it, in many ways? And hence we need to really look at all these things very closely.
Now, there's a worrying story from a father, and his son was named Louis O'Neill. He's 24, fit and healthy, football coach, and he's died, not of COVID-19, but of deep vein thrombosis. Have you seen that one?
Yeah. Well, this is what we're learning, Pat, in a way. I mean, you see, the trouble with this is that there's a case there to be made to keep moving. One worry was if people stay home too much and then they're in their bed or whatever it might be, there's a risk of deep vein thrombosis and everything. Like, remember the long-haul flights? People got deep DVTs because they were sitting in a seat all day, you know?
This poor fellow would stay up all night playing video games and, you know, not moving.
That's right, exactly. And the blood will pool then in the veins, you know, and begin to clot. I mean, this has been known as a condition for a long time. And sadly, it turns out that one consequence of lockdown and one consequence of people not getting out as much and not taking exercise is an increase in deep vein thrombosis, even in younger people. So it's an important one, that part, because it tells people keep moving. Don't be staying still all the time. It's obvious in a sense. But then the trouble is more people are taking less exercise and they're less out and about. So that's an important one to keep reminding people to keep active.
Now, we wanted to talk about these zoonotic diseases, and you drew my attention to a World Health Organization meeting that put together in February 2018 a list of diseases that posed big public health risks. And obviously, we would know some of them, like Ebola and SARS, Zika. Remember the big thing about Zika? But also Disease X. What was Disease X?
This is incredible stuff happening away. Now, again, when we discuss this, people will see the frustration among virologists and scientists. Basically, in 2018, WHO and other organizations released a big report. They said Ebola, as you say, is a risk. There's going to be disease X, they said. It'll be more deadly than flu, highly transmissible. It will come from animals, the ones we're encroaching on, by the way, you know, and we see where we're headed with this one. It'll leave economic and social devastation in its wake. And it was called Disease X. We now call that COVID-19. So there was so prescient, that prediction from 2018. And in fact, as far back as 2006, Pat, they were warning about coronaviruses jumping into humans in a much more aggressive way. Now, people say, oh, it's the little boy who cried wolf. Where's the evidence? Look what's happened. I mean, it's almost prophetic, that report, Pat, in terms of what they describe. And it's a WHO, a great organization, again, remember, which Trump decides to leave. So they did put the warning very clearly out there to watch for this. And then they also suggested how we could mitigate against this happening, you see. And now, of course, everybody's now reading that report. So it's a really important one to look at.
This guy, he's a disease ecologist, Peter Daszak. And he said, you know, you got to prepare. And then he, referring to what's going on at the moment, he says, this, what we're seeing now, a panic that's designed to slow the spread of the disease, closing down economies and so on. This, he observed, Riley, is not a plan.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What is the plan? I mean, what could you do?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great phrase, but he said what's happened is not a plan, it's panic mode. And it's true, isn't it? And of course, he was part of this WHO. And in fact, I spoke to him the other day, Pat, if you can believe it. I was on a conference call on Wednesday with a few people. They're bringing the veterinarians together with the biomedical people now in groups. And we had a big conference on Wednesday because the veterinarians have seen coronaviruses in domestic animals like pigs and sheep. And then Peter Daszak is the bat expert, you know. So he's and his voice is now being listened to, basically. So he's drawn up a very elaborate plan. This was done in 2018, by the way. They said, look, we've got to go into the wild and find these viruses. So if you like, you're like a virus hunter, I suppose is the way to think of it. And then see where the next one might come from and then prepare for it. In other words, don't just have a panic mode response. You've got a coherent plan to hunt down these viruses and try and find them ahead of time and prepare for them, you see. And now a big plan is now, it's called the Virome Genome Project. They want to try and find every virus that's out there in the wild. And it's a big task, Pat, by the way. Inevitably, they're looking for money, $4 billion, they're saying it'll cost to do it properly. But contrast that to the trillions knocked off the world economy. In other words, if this had been done in 2018, there's a good chance we wouldn't be where we are now. So this big plan is now being drawn up to stop another one happening, I guess, is the idea.
And they want to check blood samples of people who would be in danger areas, like those people who live in areas where bats are carrying coronavirus and there are other animals carrying other things and the pig industry. You know, they jump easily enough from pigs to us. So you keep on looking at pig farmers and bat eaters and all the rest of it and keep monitoring their blood. And you might catch the one before it jumps spreads.
Yeah, there's two legs to the stool, if that's the way to put it. The first is hunt down the viruses and get the number of viruses. They reckon there's at least 700,000 of these, by the way, coronaviruses in animals, that they're based on a smaller sample. You know, they did try to do this, by the way, a little bit, and they got a kind of a loose estimate. That's the total number, roughly, that we're looking to find. And then you're right, it's called the Global Immunological Observatory. You go into these places, look at the farmers. I mean, one big one, Pat, is did you know there are bat guano farmers? Can you believe it? They go into the bat caves and they take out all the bat guano. It's great fertilizer, by the way. You measure their blood the whole time and just see if there's any hint of any new antibodies being made, a new virus emerging in their blood, you see. So these are the two things that they're proposing that should be set up now, you see, to prepare us, given that the propensity for these coronaviruses to jump from animals like bats is very clear from COVID-19.
Now, the money will hopefully be forthcoming. The longer the pandemic goes on, of course, the more likely it is that people will cough up the money. What about the vaccine and getting it to poor countries? Because there's no point in developed countries all being free of the virus, but then migrant workers coming in and other people, you know, doing business in countries where the virus is rampant and returning home to developed countries. So everybody's got to get the vaccine.
Yeah, this is what WHO now, Pat, is so important, because that's the organisation historically that looks at the whole world, basically, and especially the developing world, and it's been, you know, very vocal over decades. They're now coordinating a massive plan to get loads of money in the coffers to buy the vaccine to give to the developing world. Isn't that brilliant? And of course, it has to be part of the solution, because there's no point in us eliminating the virus from Europe if it's burning furiously in a developing country, is there? Because it can still come back to us. That's the self-interest part, whatever about trying to save these people dying in these countries. So they're looking for $18 billion initially. And lo and behold, they're getting it, Pat. They've raised about $5 billion already. Some of this is coming from philanthropy. Organization like Bill Gates, of course, is involved. Organization called Gavi, another one called CEPI. These are backed by governments and financials. And lo and behold, the money's now coming into the coffers. And they want to get 2 billion doses of vaccine. And whenever the vaccine emerges, that is the next thing, by the way. But should the vaccine emerge, and let's hope it does, they're going to stockpile 2 billion doses just for the developing world. AstraZeneca, Pat, are putting up $750 million towards this fund. Isn't that tremendous? So it looks like they're going to get there. It's great. And as you say, we have to vaccinate these countries. It's extremely important that we provide the vaccine to these countries where the virus is most common.
Yeah, I mean, if you think of the people living on the dumps in Brazil or in the Philippines, you know, talk about petri dishes for infection. Anyway, the other petri dish for infection we all thought might have been all those Black Lives Matter protests, but the science says otherwise.
Well, this is an absolute fascination. And again, as I said before, we're learning every day, aren't we, about this? So it's good news in this one, Patton, actually, because the Black Lives Matter protest was a real concern, as we discussed before. You know, something like, I think, 100,000 people were gathering, you know, close contact, apparently, risk of spread, tear gas being used, arresting people, putting them into the, you know, back of police vans and so on. And now it turns out they weren't super spreading events, and it was surprising. Because, of course, they thought that they might be, you see. But it turns out there's hardly any evidence that those protests gave rise to spreading of the virus. And what's good is, Pat, they think they know why. First of all, mask wearing was high, which is fantastic, isn't it? There was a good compliance. Not every one, of course, but many of them had a high mask rate of wearing. Social distancing, they tried to maintain that. And, of course, they're outdoors, you see. So in other words, they were organized very well, basically. And that mitigated against them being super spreading events. So it was a good study in many ways.
We don't have any data from the Tulsa indoor rally that President Trump organized. Now, they have been canceling events because I think the reality is hitting home big time in the United States. But whether, given that the people traveled from all over the place to Tulsa, yeah, might be hard to spot whether that rally actually gave rise to clusters and surges.
It might be. But there you have the opposite scenario. But again, talk about a contrast. Indoors, huge crowds of people shouting and roaring and no masks, you know. So it'd be interesting to see what happens. They're looking at, they know, I mean, they can track all those people, many of them, because they registered online and stuff, you know, to go. So they can see now how many of those got infected. But you're right, it might be hard to unravel. The one on the Black Lives Matter was an amazing study, but it was 315 protests were looked at very closely. 100,000 people were monitored. So they knew then, really good data there. There were 10,000 arrests, by the way, Pat, at those Black Lives Matter protests overall. Very few of those got infected, again, because I guess the measures that were adopted. So it really is a compare and contrast, isn't it? So let's see what happens with the Tulsa numbers now.
Now, that's a statistical thing. And you also observe that some people would be scared of going out in the streets when the Black Lives Matters protests were going on. So if you look broadly at the population, the people staying home, not the shops closing, all of those things can feed into that stat. So still a bit more delving into it to be done.
Yeah, that was a key part. They did show that less people went into the city centres then, because the one thing, guys were frightened of going in because of the protests. There were more roadblocks, you see, to stop people going in. That's a very important part of this. It wasn't just the protesters, I guess, you know, following all the guidelines. It's a mix of things, I guess, you know, of trying to observe the guidelines and then less crowds overall, if you know what I mean. So those combined to sort of mitigate against the Black Lives Matter protests being super spreading events.
Now, some of the comments coming in. I'm a bus user. I use a mask. But what about the drivers? Every bus I've been on this week, no driver was wearing a mask.
The only good thing is that they're behind. Well, they're behind screens, you see. So that's so that's not too bad because they're actually in their little bubble.
But they're in the environment for I don't know what their working day is, 8 hours or whatever. And a lot of people coming in talk about mixing up of the units and all the air that they breathe. In other words, I don't know, this person has texted me, the virus does not travel through the air, so what good is a mask? From George.
Oh, my Lord.
Listening to us.
is it traveling through the water? Where the person thinks the virus is coming from?
Yeah, I mean, it is spread by coughing and breathing and so on. This one. So I can't go to Spain on holiday, but anyone from the UK is allowed in on planes and ferries unconditionally. Where's the logic in this? This is the idea that we can't go out, but other people, particularly those in the UK, cross the border or across the sea, they come in. So.
Yeah, superb point. I mean, the thing is, it's a very complicated thing in a way, and every country is slightly different, and how are we monitoring different things? That's a really good example of inconsistency, isn't it? You know, so hence, as I said already, get on this travel thing, look at it really closely with great detail, bring the experts in, and try to figure out the best way to proceed. Because as I say, it's the biggest risk we face.
Yeah, another one remarking on that. The measures on community and schools would not be necessary if they closed off travel. We need to stop the virus in the community. People are off to Spain, and then on the other hand, kids will have to put up with crazy rules here. Something very wrong in that logic. Another one.
Precisely.
Let me see. As a parent, have I got this correct? Pupils will congregate in large groups before school, during lunch break and after school with no social distancing, as they've been doing for the last number of weeks. However, according to newly appointed Minister Foley, 1 metre social distancing will not be necessary among very young kids. However, with slightly older pupils, 1 metre distancing will be required from third class up. Then all secondary school students and teachers will be required to socially distance. This means 1 metre spacing between all desks at a minimum. Then there's the possibility of pods, which would see small groups of students grouped together at a time, and each pod would stay 1 metre from all other pods. Good God, is the minister real? I'm confused already, and I've only got one child attending school. Then to put the cherry on the cake, no person, child, teacher or parent, should attend an educational setting if unwell, or if any members of their household are unwell with symptoms consistent with COVID-19. The minister won't have to worry about social distancing in the classroom, as there'll be no one there once the winter sniffles hit. Let the pupils go back to school as normal and ask teachers to wear full PPE. Problem solved.
Well, they're very good points. But and remember, if our mission here is to get the virus down to almost nothing before schools reopen in our country, then many of these worries go away, you see, and you can then, you know, adapt to that new world in a way. If that happens, it'll be fantastic. And that's got to be the goal overall.
All right, Luke, look, thank you very much. And particularly for that breaking news you gave us at the very beginning that the Chinese vaccine, a reputable company and so on, into phase 3 testing with the Chinese army. And let's hope the news is good.
Exactly. Keep an eye on it.
All right. Keep an eye on it. Thank you very much, Luke, for joining us.